Well, thank you all for coming back. I think you've had a good conversation already, so I'll just turn it over to you.
Well, I should have presented this data a long time ago, but we had to stop the project. It was only 1 year that we got to do this, and unfortunately, this research had to stop after 1 year. And only it was only set, I wasn't set up to present the data in one from 1 year's data. It was only 3 replications, but we're going to present it because I think it's something we should be looking at here. And what we were doing at that time was we were seeing how much ethanol production we could get from the corn starch from an acre of corn. This was done with a group of my consultants, they agreed to let me go out in their cornfield and screen hybrids to try to find hybrids for the system, and this is, then I'll show what we were doing. And then Dr. Kremer and Dr. Lupo are co-authors on this. I asked them, now, what is the sustainability of a system like this if this system would be adopted in agriculture? So with that, if you can bear with me, and I'd like to proceed. Let's see, how do we proceed here? Well, let's see.
It's page down.
Right. Oh.
Yeah, here, okay. Or the mouse, either one.
Okay.
Down.
Okay, down. Perfect. Okay. This is a schematic of the system that we were using at that time, that we were working on, and that is that we have rows far enough apart, twin rows far enough apart, so that sunlight is able to reach all of the chloroplasts in the cornfield. And if your corn is about 100, average about 106 inches in height, a 52.5-inch width of the solar corridor, enables the light, the incident sunlight, to reach each leaf. But then I would like to have something using the light that does hit the ground. And that's why we have another crop on what we call the solar corridor floor. And one of my preferred crops is a winter wheat crop, or a winter grain crop, or a winter oilseed crop, with a clover crop, a stubble crop involved with it. But I've never had the opportunity of planting on the right side. We have the actual plant the way I'd like to see those plants spaced in the twin row, where the Dr. Eberhard told me, you know, that we are able to do that now. But the data I'll present did not have that kind of benefit to it. So the yields would be a little bit higher, hopefully, I think, with that system. Now, I didn't take pictures of this first year of this research that we did on Jerry Ash's farm, but this is a picture I took from what the University of Missouri is doing. This is a part of a study where they're trying to find out what crops should we be growing in between those corn rows. And we selected a crop to try to give weed suppression, a prostrate crop, and that's cowpeas. But in our study, we did not have cowpeas. We had a crop that looked more like this, which was actual garden peas. And then this also shows that, you know, that you can have as many solar corridors in the field as you want. Here we had not as many solar corridors in the field, but there at the university we're looking at trying to figure out what crops we should be that will work in this system. But here's the data I have from that 1 year, the 1 year of this particular study. But this is fairly common, is that, and we've repeated this many times in another research project. But we were able to produce, you know, 190 bushel of corn with all the hybrids we had in our trial, without accounting for anything on the floor crop, any value of the floor crop. But the purpose of this study was to see that I had a companion study side by side where I had peas growing, and another study where I had no peas growing. I wanted to see, I had to determine if we could produce another crop without impacting the corn yield. That we had to be done. And I've only got 1 year of data on this to see show this, but certainly the peas, the site one that had the peas, that yielded the same as the site that did not have the peas in it. So therefore, if the peas, which did produce a high value crop, had no negative effect on corn yield, then in fact we could assign the peas to one half of the field, or whatever that crop would be. In this case, it was peas, and the other half to the corn. So if we did that, of course, then assuming 2.7 gallons of ethanol from a bushel of corn, which all the farmer-owned plants, which this corn did go into, could produce 1,000 gallons per acre from each of those four hybrids, from each of the hybrids we used on that particular site. Oh, and one thing I would say, I apologize, I didn't cover what the Guilford fine sandy loam soil was. That was just one of the seven soil types we had in the study I had set up. I tried to set up a representative range of the soils we had in our study area. But this site is where the grower had his own twin row planter, and it was easy to plant the peas and the corn at the same time, so that we, in all the other sites, we didn't have a twin row planter. We had to double back and plant twice to plant the corn, and so that's why it was on that soil type instead of any of the other soils we had. But based on the other soil types, the results of this did not change if we selected the varieties right. Problem we had, I screened 200 corn hybrids. 200 corn hybrids, and it looked to me like we had about 21 hybrids. Well, 21 hybrids met our screening criterion that indicated to me we had enough grain flex on those hybrids to in fact produce as much corn or more corn in a 60-inch wide twin row as we did in single row, every 30-inch rows. So B, C, and D are three of the hybrids of the 21 hybrids that did meet our screening criterion that said we could increase yield. They would fit this system. We anticipated that B, C, and D would do very well in this system. But in this particular site, at this one population, we got that, the hybrid A did that also. And hybrid A was a very high-performing hybrid that came out of the 179 hybrids that did not respond to this kind of system that said, oh, this system's kind of a stupid idea. It didn't yield much. But anyway, now I'm going to go to try to show how that study, that one study that we had to quit, was one of a series of studies where this was the design for the corn yields, where we're only looking at corn yield only. We didn't have the resource to study everything else, but we're looking at corn yield. We had 12 production environments of my clients in this area. This was eastern Illinois at 40 to 41 degrees north latitude. And I think that we're talking about sun angle, that the latitude might make it. It probably does make a difference. I'm not sure. And then we find that the hybrid pop, we didn't assume that the hybrid population, preferred hybrid population, would be the same in twin rows in this system as it was in conventional. So we split our population in four populations, had three replications, and randomized block split plot design. And we only had, and it had two entries. We had then a control was if they had, the site host had 30-inch rows, planting equipment, the control was 30 inches, and the treatment was 60-inch twin rows. If the site host had 36-inch planter rows, we had 72-inch centers. All these treatments were north-south rows between 40 and 41 degrees. Now, it works in east-west rows, but our study was north-south rows, and it's a different set of hybrids. It's different hybrids, and I don't think we can get 10% of the hybrids to work in east-west rows. But anyway, this is how this study was done. Now, here's the results we had. And I said that study I showed that the 1,000 gallons from us just from one of these sites, only where we had a parallel sites, twin sites side by side. But Hybrid A, of course, does not like that idea. It doesn't like this wide rows thing. But B, C, and D like it fine. They respond to it and they do well. But we all know that at yield level might have an effect on this. And so our yields were a little bit less than what we would like to have had because we have some plant populations that are suboptimal. Obviously, they're all in that. And then so I took a look at what would happen if we just pulled out the highest yielding environments to look, and we got the same results. Hybrid A, the only difference is the yield level is a little bit higher, but Hybrid A yielded didn't like that system, and B, C, and D did. And I can discuss B, C, and D more later, what they were later or something. But anyway, this consistent, the integrity of the response to that extra light seemed to be maintained throughout our studies. Now here, so I said, well, what would happen if we did this at the highest population? At the highest yielding population. And again, the same results were the same. Yield level, of course, obviously was higher here, but the results were the same as Hybrid A doesn't like this system, B, C, and D do. Now, and I think that if we had the right researchers working on this, this is an idea that I'm sure like to see us develop this idea. Dr. Kremer couldn't make it here today. He's a co-author on it. He's a soil scientist. He's been working with me for the last few years on measuring soil carbon put into the soil and this sort of thing. And I don't even know how to pronounce glucosidase, but he does. And what we've found is that we are able to put. We think we're able to put more carbon in the soil at the root exudates, because that makes sense, of course, that you would. But anyway, all I've asked him is this sustainable? Is this doing anything for soil? And he said, yes, and we think it is sustainable for soil. I went to Dr. Lupo and said, now, what if every acre of corn in the United States had adopted this system? Would there be enough atmospheric CO2? Because one thing is, this system takes a lot more CO2 out of the atmosphere. That's where the yield comes from. But and he says, of course, based on his calculations, we should have sufficient CO2 to produce at this level on the current number of corn acres for the foreseeable future. So I think this is sustainable. You know, everything I do, I want to make sure it's sustainable from an agronomic standpoint. The thing that this hasn't done is we don't know if farmers will want to do this or not. And so far, I haven't had any inclination really in favor of that. But depending on the results of comprehensive site-specific research, growing season conditions, and proper development and full deployment of this system we've now come up with. One of the original clients said, you know, called it the solar corridor. Well, that's a great name. That's very descriptive of the system. And in that, we do have the potential to sustainably produce 1,000 gallons of biofuels per acre per year on up to 90 million corn acres. But that statement is just on that 1 year of data they had. And sorry to say, but Jerry Ash was killed in an accident after the first year of the study. But on those other sites where I had the bar graph data, the other sites, we continued that as long as those hybrids lasted. And those hybrids all ran out after 5 or 6 or 7 years. And so we have to do it constantly, be screening for hybrids. And these were the hybrids I started out with, were non-GMO hybrids. And I didn't want to change hybrids in the midst of the study. But the Kelly Nelson study that tested, challenged this hypothesis in Agronomy Journal, volume 106, September-October issue, said that he got the same yields from one hybrid in 60-inch rows as he did 30-inch rows at one of two hybrids. But it takes a lot of hybrid selection to figure out what hybrids to use in this system. But anyway, that's basically what I just wanted to present. I worked on the solar quarter system for a long time, but I never presented this data that said of that where we had the peas growing there, and I haven't. That's not been statistically analyzed, proven that we're able to produce that other crop without affecting the corn yield. That really hasn't been done yet, but it looks to me like it is. You know, looks at it. So, if you have any questions on this, I'd be glad to entertain them. It's been a very interesting project. Yes.
Are you familiar with Nick Gill over in Georgia?
No, I'm not.
He is doing a lot. Not exactly what you're doing, but he's working with what's called living mulch, where he's actually using a cover crop. But he's not used this concept yet, but if you marry those two things together, he's actually trying to keep a cover crop growing for weed control, for nitrogen production, and maintain his corn yield, but he's trying to do it in 30-inch rows. And it's working there. You know, we tried to put together a project for SARE, but they didn't like it as it was between Georgia and Mississippi.
Yeah.
But for the same thing, trying to figure out a constantly living system that wouldn't hurt corn yields, but could maintain the cover crop and the ground cover year-round. What you're showing, being able to go to wider rows without hurting the corn yield. My question, when you plant twin rows, are you using the same population as you would for solid 30s?
I was. All the seminal research data was, yes, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it was.
So if you're planting 35,000
is
twin rows.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, our screening trials were real simple. Just took out every other row and had one half X population. See how the flex was. Okay, so then if their screening trials had a population one half X, I thought in our studies, advanced studies, one of those trials should be one half X, 15,000 plants per acre. And then the other was at the 30,000 plants per acre. And I had two hybrid populations in between those two. And we found that one of those hybrids up there, one thing I had a problem selecting what was the highest yielding population, one of the hybrids had the same yield as all populations, from one half X to X. Now, but that hybrid quit when Marvin Mann died. No one knew how to reproduce that hybrid. I forgot now what I was going to say. But did I answer your question, though? Okay. And I appreciate what the University of Missouri has been doing. That they now are trying to figure out what crops we do put in between corn rows to have that winter cover it. But the seedling, the stubble crop, if we have a stubble crop that would kind of go dormant during the summer, you know, so it wouldn't compete much with the corn. But just that would be ideal, but we haven't found that crop yet. But if we can select a stubble crop, a cover crop that maybe is a host for mycorrhiza, could that be a benefit? And we know, of course, we can host the nitrogen, rhizobia, or whatever we do. So, thank you.
Thank you.